right. So, as you guys recall, we are in the middle of the story, and what we're doing is we're threading the overall theme of the Bible, so not just individual stories about Noah and Abraham and David and Daniel and how they're just interspersed in there, but how they all seamlessly transition into one overarching story. Can anyone tell me what we've created a sentence of sorts that tells what is the overall story in one sentence? Can anybody tell me that one sentence that we've created together as a group? Yeah. Yeah.
Man's continual rejection of God and his blessing as God continues to pursue them until the coming of Jesus and the redemption he provides to display God's glory through God's people.
Yes. Yeah. That's pretty on point. So man's continual rejection of God while he pursues after them in the ultimate culmination of the redemption of Christ and purchasing his people who declare his glory among the nations. Is that about accurate? Yeah? Good. So let's practice through our walkthrough. If you need your paper, use it. You notice that there is no more papers in the back. That is there for a reason. If you didn't get one at the first, tough luck. You are doing it by memory now. If you've lost yours, you're doing it by memory. All right? So we are on week 3, and so I'm getting to be pretty brutal because I'm expecting by week 8 when I come back, no one will have a paper. So that's my expectation. Oh, mom's like, oh, really? We'll see about that. I'm your mother. could be. But let's start to practice without using it. If you need it, use it. But if not, try without using it. I'll continue to use the hand motions to kind of jog our memories. Okay, so our walkthrough starts in what town? Ur. Our four main characters are? And God calls them to leave, so they go up what river? For what reason? Until they get to what town? Haran, right? Haran, yeah. Where who dies? And they leave Haran and go into the land of? Where God promises Abraham three things. And Abraham has two sons. And Isaac has two sons. Their names are? Esau, right. And Jacob has how many sons? And the second to the youngest is? Joseph is favored by his brothers and hated by his father. Favored by his father and hated by his brothers, so he is sold into? In the country of? In the house of? Pot of fur. Where he eventually becomes? I kind of died there at the end. Where he becomes what? Right. Because of the famine, Joseph brings his family down to Egypt. Israel grows into a? Or how many people? I tried to do a half a finger and it's so hard. Joseph dies, a new Pharaoh takes over, and we have what? 400-year Egyptian captivity, right. Then God raises up a deliverer in who? Pharaoh won't let the Israelites go, so God brings about the plagues, which is to do what? Convince Pharaoh. Let's try that again. If you need to look at your paper, do that, because that was a little rough. All right, so Pharaoh won't let the Israelites go, so God brings about plagues for what three reasons? Right. Then Moses leads them out across what sea? And they take a right to where God gives them the law. There are three divisions of the law. Right. The first principles of the law are the? And how many laws are there altogether? And God makes a covenant with them. Obey and be? Disobey and be? They say they will obey, so Moses leads them across the wilderness into what town? Right. And where they send how many spies into the land? And what do they say? And the two are? And as a result, they wander in the wilderness. For how long? Right, until everyone over? Except? Okay, so then Moses leads them up to the? Where he gives them the law, a? Then God raises up a new leader. Joshua leads them across what river? To the capital city of? Where they have a? Right. Then they go 14 miles northwest, the town of? Where they suffer? Achan defeat. After they deal with Achan, they take a south. They take the south how? And the north? Then they divide up the land into how many parts? Who are the prominent rulers during this time? Right. The female is? And the strong one is? And the one with all the Bibles? And the period is characterized by? And it's anarchy. So they look around and they see all the other nations have what? So the last judge and the first prophet, who is also the king anointer, is? Right. Who anoints, who is the first king? And in the book of? Then God promises David, sorry. The second king is? In the book of? God promises David that his throne will last. The third king is? In the book of? First Kings. The fourth king is? Rehoboam. And who is he? Solomon's son. He wants to become richer than his father, so he taxes the people to death. As a result, the kingdom? And who goes to the north? And who goes to the south? Rehoboam. Bomb. How many tribes go to the north? And how many to the south? The north is called? And the south is called? I think I just mixed that up in north and south. You guys have to understand I'm really bad with north and south and all that. So north is? And the south is? Judah. Who does God raise up to try and shape up Israel and the prophet and Judah? No one listens, so who does God bring in from the north to take Israel captive? And what kind of people are they? Cruel. How many years after the split kingdom? 200 years. The prophets go in south, but nobody listens, so God brings in? And what kind of people are they? Educators. And how long are they in captivity? Why? They didn't let the land lay rest. How many years is this captivity after the Assyrian captivity? 150 years. Then a new empire takes over. Who are they? Medes and the Persians. They allow the Jews to come back in three expeditions. The first is led by? And he rebuilds the? And the second is led back by? And he rebuilds there. And the third is led back by? Nehemiah, and he rebuilds the walls. How long of a silent period between the completion of the Jewish scriptures and the coming of Christ?
400 years.
And who was the prominent leader during this time? So he is Greek, so the New Testament is written in Greek. And we did it! All right, good job. Good job. Keep working on that, and we'll keep reviewing that every week. Last week, we looked at the books of the Bible, and how, especially the books of the Old Testament, and how they fit into this story, and what the timeline is of the story. So just to review that, what are the five books of the law? Well, first of all, let me just say this. There's three divisions of the Old Testament. What are those three divisions? The law, the prophets, and the writings. Okay, the law. What books are called the law? Right. So when you see, you know, when you hear of Jesus explaining through the law, the prophets, and the writings, this is what we're talking about. The law is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And then the prophets, what are those six books that cover the whole timeline? What six books are those? Yes. Nope. Just those six. Just 1 and 2 Samuel are two books, and 1 and 2 Kings are two books, right? I heard a Ruth in there, so you're getting in the rhythm. Joshua, Judges, Ruth. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Don't say Ruth. That is not a part of the, that's included in Judges, right? Ruth goes into the time of Judges, but to cover the whole timeline, we have Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and all the other books fit into there somehow. And then, what are the books in the writings? What are those? No, it's not Ruth. No, Ezra, not Ezra and Nehemiah. What are the writings? Yes, Psalms. So there's one more. Job, right? Those are the books of the writings, right? And so then all the other books that we have fit into the writings. Somewhere, some way, in those the timeline of that six books, right? You remember that? We talked about that, and all the we have all those books of the prophets, right? So Ezra all the way to Malachi, and when we're in one of those books, right? All there's 16 of them that are before the time of exile, and there are five that are not. There's two that are during exile, and then there are three after the exile. What are the books that are during the exile? What is it? Ezekiel and Daniel are the ones that are during the exile. And what are the ones that are after exile? I'm hearing Zechariah and Malachi. All right, that's two of them. What's the other one? Haggai. Right. So those are the three that are after. So if you find yourself in the Old Testament, and especially in the prophets, and you're in anything other than those five books, you are before the time of exile. And where God is warning through the prophets, it's about to come. It's about to come. And if you're in Ezekiel, Daniel, you're right at during the time of exile. And then if you're in those other three, you are after Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Got that? I'm going to keep hammering that home so that you guys understand where you are at in this story. Because I think a lot of times we just get lost. We just start reading a book and we have no idea where we're at. So I want you guys to get that in our thick skulls. All right? So on to the new week, a new lesson. Many of us, we know the story in four words. It's kind of the common thing nowadays, is to explain the whole story of the Bible in four words. Creation, fall, redemption, restoration. Have anybody ever heard that? Anybody ever heard that? Yeah, it's very common. It's kind of come out in the last 15, 20 years to use that moniker, if you will. Creation, fall, redemption, and restoration. Or, in another way, is God, man, Christ, and response. to kind of summarize the gospel, to summarize Genesis to Revelation. Do you find that that is how the apostles told the gospel or told the whole narrative of the story in their sermons in the book of Acts? Whoa. One no. Who votes no? Who votes yes? That is how they told the gospel in those sermons in Acts, when we find Peter and Paul and Stephen's sermons. Who votes yes? Now, who votes I don't know? All right, so a lot of I don't knows. So let's just see. Where did they start? Where did the... Dave's kind of going up and down. Explain. Yeah. Where do each of them start? Because in this popular moniker in our generation is to start with creation, and then with fall, and then with Christ. Do they start with creation? No. Where do they start? Yeah. All three of them in Acts with Peter, Stephen, and Paul, they all start with Abraham in Genesis 12. So that's where we're going to start. We're going to follow that example of those sermons in Acts and say, all right, if that's where they're starting, that's where we're going to start in our story. Now, we understand that's not to say that the first 11 chapters are unimportant. No, they are very, very important. They're the backdrop to the story. But they understand as God, in his providence and what the story is all about, it starts in Genesis 12. Yes, John.
Can you clarify the sermons
that you're referring to? Yeah, this is where you might be a little bit lost. We talked about this in week one. And so those sermons are Acts chapter 3, Acts chapter 7, and Acts chapter 13. Those are the three sermons, primary sermons that we have in the book of Acts. So that's one's what I'm talking about. And just to clarify, that is how when we look at Luke chapter 24 and Jesus opening their minds to understand the scriptures, this is kind of how we see that fleshed out in the rest of the New Testament, is specifically in those three stories, or those three sermons. Nah, that's an interesting proposal. Where do you see that?
Acts 17:24, that God who made the world and everything in it, he's sort of having trying to be by
him. Right. So we have him talking to the Gentiles and introducing it that way. Now, in Peter's sermon to Cornelius, does he start there? Now, he is also a what? A Gentile. So, yeah, there are other ways in which he doesn't necessarily start in creation, but he does say that the God who did this, right? Yeah, Caleb.
Isn't Cornelius, though, a God-fearing man? So when I see Paul talking to those that were already God-fearing, he starts in Genesis 12, but the Ephesians were not. They had no concept of the God of the Bible. So I think when you're dealing with people that have no concept of the God of the Bible, you have to start in Genesis 1. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, the Athenians were not atheists by any stretch of the imagination. So let's not think that they are atheists. They definitely would believe that God made the world. Now, which God is a different aspect, but they would still say that God definitely made the world. There's no such thing as evolution, or there's no atheism that's there. And so he is correcting and saying this is the God who made heavens and the earth. It's this God right here, not your other gods. But at the same time, Cornelius was not a Jew. That's the point that I'm trying to make, is that, yeah, he might be following that God, but he doesn't find himself as part of God's people. He is finding himself as away from God's people, but yet worshiping that God, right? And so that's why he needs to be, because he's not saved at that point, right? Cornelius is not saved when Peter comes to him. Even though he's a God-fearer, doesn't make him one of God's people. We could probably list people that we know are God-fearers, but are not part of his people. And why is that important? So that's what we want to look at. Why does the stories in the book of Acts, all the sermons, all start in Acts, or in, sorry, in Genesis chapter 12? So we're going to, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Where does the sermon at Pentecost fit in?
Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is we're looking at how, now you guys are kind of getting all off topic with other sermons in Acts, but what we're trying to do is trying to outline that story that Jesus is doing in Luke chapter 24. So the way that, how did the apostles, whose their minds were opened, right, to understand the scriptures, to understand Jesus said, this is who I am in the law and the prophets and the writings to them. And how did they see that in those three sermons? Now, they didn't specifically do that in Acts chapter 2, right? They don't do that in Acts chapter 17. They don't, even Peter doesn't do that in to Cornelius in Acts chapter 10. But in those three sermons, they are breaking down what Jesus is doing in Luke 24. Does that make sense? Right, right. Because I wish that Luke could have recorded that conversation on Emmaus, but he just says they opened up their minds to understand, and it's like, where is it? And I think that Luke does that in those sermons in Acts. He doesn't do it at that moment, but he does it through those three sermons in three different kind of angles, if you will. Yeah. Does that make sense? Does that make sense to everybody? Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at three parts of the beginning of this story, where the story starts. Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3, and Genesis 15, 1 to 6, and Genesis 17, 1 to 8. So for about 5 minutes, what I want us to do is to kind of break up into a few groups, maybe 5-6 people of those that are around you, and I'm going to ask you two questions. Why do you think that the story starts in Genesis 12? Why is that so important that each of these guys start in Genesis chapter 12? And two, what were the terms of this agreement that was made? There was a covenant that was made between God and Abraham, and what were those terms? So answer those two questions. Why is it so important it starts here, and what were the elements of the covenant, both to that on God's part and on Abraham's part? So break up into... Yeah, go ahead. It was 17, 1 to 8, and it's 15, 1 to 6. 15, 1 to 6, 17, 1 to 8. Yeah, ready? On your mark, get set, bake. Or study. It's blink. The light is blinking.
Was it flashing last week?
You know? No. All right, just kidding, I gave you one more minute. All right, so I'm going to work in reverse order on these questions. So what was the covenant terms of this agreement between God and Abram? What was God's end of the deal?
He said, I will.
I will? I will what? Right. Yeah, Sam. To be a shield? I think I just spelled that wrong. I don't know. God will bless others. Anything else? Yeah. No. Yeah. So yeah, somebody said, I will. All right, so what was Abram's, what did he bring to the covenant? What was his stipulations? Believe. Sort of obey. Go.
Be blameless.
Anything else?
Yeah, physically also obey as far as the circumcision goes.
Yeah. Anything else? Yeah, that says set apart down there underneath circumcision. Just that you're going to be a set apart person.
Trust.
Yeah, trust, believe. This is kind of a maybe a side thing, but to bless others. Right? He is. It's kind of an outflow of it, but he is to be a blessing to others, right? God is going to bless him so that he will bless others, right? Okay, so based on that, why is it so important that each of these guys, they started in Genesis 12? Why is it so important that the story starts here and not necessarily in Noah or in the fall? Why start here? Yeah, God has a plan. He's going to carry out, and he's going to do it. Yeah.
And something I never thought about until we were just doing this is that in Genesis 11, he like divides all the nations in judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like right away, here's the path back.
Right.
What it was meant to be.
Yep. Yeah, Genesis 11 is pretty important. You guys know Genesis 11? That's what happens in Genesis 11? The Tower of Babel, in which it was basically, at that time, one nation. And now God has created multiple nations out of that, out of their own rebellion, after their rejection of God, wanting to get to God on their own terms, and making it us versus God instead of us with God. And then he splits them up into nations. And then in Genesis 12, right after that, God calls out one nation and says, you are going to be my people, and out of you, I'm going to bless all the other nations. That's pretty important. What Julie's saying is very, very important, that he's calling out one nation to magnify and place it. He already said, I'm going to place my glory on all humans, but they are failing in that, and so I'm going to call out one people to do that, and they will be set apart, as we see there, set apart for my glory, and they will display my glory to the nation. So it starts right there at the very beginning, and that is the theme for the rest of the Old Testament, right? Is him fleshing out that promise to Abraham, right? And it's going to culminate in Jesus, and you're going to see that even at the end of the story as well. So this is why this is so important. There are three foundational truths that we have to get from this, and that is one, is that God, and I think we see this, God is saving a people. Not a person, but he's raising up a people. I think in our individualist society, we think, oh, it's just me and Jesus, but he is raising up a people. And we're going to see that all throughout the whole all throughout the Bible, it's not just he's getting individuals, but he is getting a people that's going to be his own possession, that they will be his God and they will be his people, not his persons or his individuals, but his people. So God is raising up a people, he's saving a people that will be a beacon for his glory, right? And to be a blessing to others. So he's raising up, he's saving a people that is going to be a beacon of light for the other nations, that is going to bless all the other nations, and his people, they're going to be his people. They are his people through what? How is Abraham his chosen one? It's through
faith.
And so we'll see these all throughout our story, from Genesis to Revelation. We're going to see these foundational truths that's already right there from the beginning. God is saving a people that will be a beacon of light for his glory to the other nations, and that are his people through faith. Right, and we see that already. What was it, Genesis 17 that said that? That it was his, or was it Genesis 15? 15. That it was his righteousness, it was his faith that was counted to him as righteousness. So we all know, we kind of know this story, right? These foundational truths are nothing new to many of us. What my question is does this foundational truth, does it change your view of Scripture? When you come to other stories, when you come to the story of Samson, for instance, if you come to the story of Saul, or you come to Ezekiel, how are these truths important when you go to all throughout the Bible? How does that change your view of Scripture? Does that question make sense?
Because the people of Israel failed in their effort to glorify God and to obey him. And so he sent them into exile. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ron is saying that the exile makes a lot more sense, because the biggest condemnation against his people was that they were to be, number two, a beacon for his glory among all the other nations, and they were failing to do that. And so God sends them into exile for that purpose, because they were failing in that aspect of the promise. Right. Yeah, Tom.
So the question, though, is, to start this, why did the apostles start in Genesis 12?
Right.
That hasn't really been answered yet. I mean, we talked about it. Because probably most of the people knew who Abraham was, and knew that either they were the chosen people of God, and when they hear stories of Samson and all that, they remember who he is through, because of Israel was God's chosen people.
Right.
So is that why they started with Abraham?
Right. Because this is the story of the Bible, right? And if this is the story of the Bible, we got to start at the very beginning. Where did God start saving a people? He started right there in Abraham. That's the first person he chose as his chosen people. That's why this is important. That's why it starts here. Because if this is the storyline of the Bible, you have to start at the beginning. He didn't start to save a people in Genesis 3. He didn't start to save a people in Genesis 7 and 8 to 9 with Noah. He starts right here in Abraham to save a people. And he's going to be a beacon of light, and it's going to be through faith that it's going to happen.
So why did you say that it's not
through
Noah?
Did...
Not who made
his
prophet,
because
then he
didn't
choose to save Noah.
Right. But was that to be a beacon to the other nations?
No.
Because there was no other nations at that point, right? He destroyed them all. Right? And at the same time, was Noah's righteousness through faith? Right. It said he was a righteous man, but not righteous through faith. He was a righteous man.
It does say, though, that by faith Noah.
In Hebrews 11, yeah, right. But
there was faith there.
Right, there was definitely, because how could you build an ark when. So he obviously followed God in those times, but his righteousness, it says there's no righteousness by faith. Your faith is counted to you as righteousness, right? Noah was already a righteous man before that. There was no, that promise we see that, I mean, in the New Testament is tied to Abraham and not to Noah. It's tied to Abraham. So where were we? I forgot.
Well, back to your question.
Yeah. Right.
And so it makes sense to me that that's where we start.
Yeah, right. So he's saying that, and to the Jews, they would understand that their nation started with Abraham. So it would make sense that those sermons would start there. And I would say even for us, we are God's people. And we also start where? With Abraham, because we are his people. And God's saving his people from there. We are now the others that is being blessed through Abraham. It starts there. So, how does these three truths, it affects our view of Scripture, but does that also affect our lives and how we live our lives on a daily basis?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, here he was reminding them, or should have been reminding them, of what their purpose was in the world to glorify God among the nations.
Yeah.
And so I'm challenged to think, okay, we should be glorifying God among the nations. That's mm-hmm. our purpose.
Yeah, right. That's a great point. So Don is saying that, and Paul is talking a lot to Jews who rejected this. They were supposed to accept that and be a blessing to the nations, but then Paul goes and goes to the Gentiles to be that blessing, and the Jews rejected that. And how often we do that. We think we need to be enclosing in our circles here. We need to be a blessing to others in the church, rather than we as God's church, as God's people, is to be a blessing to our city, to our community. Our blessing is not just to retain in these four walls, right? But it's to go and to, we're blessed to be a blessing out and to be a light and a beacon to the nations, in the nations, even in Hutchinson, the different people there. So yeah, that does, right there from the very beginning, affect how we live our life. These foundational truths that we are to be a blessing to others. Any other ways that this can affect our lives? Yeah, John. John is saying, in case you didn't hear, that he is saying that my practice of Christianity isn't just me and Jesus, but since, number one, God is saving a people, that I am following Christ as a community, not just me listening to sermons on my way to work, but me being in, doing life with people. Any last remaining comments before we wrap up? Yeah, Julie. So Julie is expanding our boundaries, that we're not, it just kind of crushes our idolatry of, you know, maybe nationalism or things like that. But man, God's border is even beyond that. Now, he's not bound by nation lines, but to go even crossing that to people who don't look or act or think like us, to be a blessing even to them. So that's coming from...
Mm-hmm. And be a blessing to them, but to truly be united and see ourselves as on the same.
Yeah. Plane. Yeah. So those who are God's people, yeah, we are fellow brothers and sisters with them, on the same plane with them, one people. Not, okay, you're a church over here, you're a church over here, but we are all God's people. We're going to see that very clearly at the end of our story in Revelation 7, Revelation 5, where there is people from every tongue, tribe, people, and nation worshiping around the throne. So now we see that this is God saving a people that has been a blessing to all the other nations. So just a sneak peek at the end. I don't want to ruin the story for you, but I just did it. So anyway, I want to wrap us up here a few minutes early. And I do that because John or Josh, I don't know who told me. I think John told me. Yeah, so the youth, if you're a student, junior, senior high, please go to the library and meet John and Josh for some announcements right after that. So right after I pray. Let me just pray as I close. Father, thank you so much for this story. Thank you for introducing us to this story in Genesis 12. We are humbled that you would call Abram from his nation to where he is at, from Haran, and tell him to go into the land of Canaan. And he obeyed, and he listened, and he believed, and it was counted to him as righteousness. And so we are now his children. We are, Abraham is now our father because of that. And so we are so thankful for you calling a people to be a blessing to the other nations and to be a beacon of light. And so we believe this. We are your people. So continue to sanctify us. Continue to let us know and to illuminate our minds to see Jesus as the center focal point of this story. And so we pray this all in his name. Amen. If you all have any more questions, feel free to ask me, but students, go to the library.